This is The Gardening Show
with Master Gardener Bob Harris
on WESB.
Presented by Worth W. Smith Hardware.
Call the show 368-WESB.
That's 368-9372.
And welcome to The Gardening Show. We're back live, and it's a little chillier than it used to be, Bob, I'm noticing.
Yeah,
I'll say. Oh, well, hey, that's this time of year. What are you going to do, right?
Yeah, true.
So it's all part of the adventure.
That's right, yeah. You know, and I like the change of seasons.
Absolutely. So what is on the agenda today? I see you have a library of brought with you. If you look at our Facebook Live, you can see the stack of books that Bob brought in today.
And I'm going to talk about them a little bit. But first, I want to say, you know, I hope you're enjoying the fall. It's one of the better falls we've had. It's been great. But I want to talk a little bit about some unusual trees. I'll start out with the Dawn Redwood and the Ginkgo. And they have survived, and we want to know why. Why did they survive? They are ancient trees. They are both around during the time of the dinosaurs.
Wow.
When just about 65 million years ago, everything disappeared, except the Dawn Redwood and the Ginkgo tree. They survived through that. And by the way, we can grow them right in Bradford here. They grow very nicely. The ginkgo tree has a odd-shaped leaf and a lot of other benefits, one of them being it's not susceptible to any pest or disease. And that makes it unusual, too.
Wow.
When a lot of trees we know are susceptible to that, and we've lost a lot of trees because of that. And same with the Dawn Redwood. No pest or disease can bother that. You can plant these two trees, and you'll have them forever with no problems at all. And they both have a great growing habit, too. Also, I want to talk about the oak a little bit. It's a very tall but wide-spreading tree. And being a wide-spreading tree, it casts a lot of shade beneath it. So it's difficult for anything else to grow underneath it, including its own young. It drops a lot of acorns every now and then. It's what we call a mass tree. It may produce a few acorns every year, but every so many years, it's around 3 to 5 years, it'll produce what we call a mass crop, which is a huge crop that a lot of animals like to take advantage of. And so since the acorns will drop right below it in the shade of its own mother tree, they can't really grow well there. So maybe the tree has devised a system that makes it a good food source for animals. They carry it off, bury it, and a lot of them are forgotten, and then they can grow up in those other spots instead of right underneath the mother tree. Other trees like the locust tree, the old locust tree with old DNA in it had a lot of thorns on it. We still get some with thorns, but the thorns only grow from the base of the tree to 15 foot high. And through a lot of research, we have discovered the locust tree produces a long bean-like pod that's very nutritious to certain animals, like the mammoth. Oh. They fed on the locust tree. And that's why we think it had thorns from the ground up to 15 feet. That's all the farther the mammoth could reach. So there was no need for the tree to produce thorns above that. And once in a while in the wild, you can find one of those locust trees with those thorns, even sticking out of the trunk. And they can be really large thorns, you know, up 5-6 inches long. And so scientists and botanists believe that that was the tree's defense against the mammoth. Of course, the mammoth disappeared, but we still have a few of those locusts around. There's a couple up at Oak Hill Cemetery that are growing in the wild part of the cemetery. Pretty interesting to see.
Very neat.
But I brought along a lot of books because that's what gardeners do in the wintertime. Since we can't work out in our yard much, we like to expand our knowledge and get some enjoyment. So I'm going to go over a few of these, and maybe some of you can order some of these books and get some nice reading through the winter.
See, I just figure that gardeners during the winter, they're, you know, like especially master gardeners like you, mad scientist types, bring the garden inside the house. I just imagine your whole house is like overgrown with all these plants green and everything.
Well, mine used to be. Yeah, it's not anymore because I have cats and and the cats like to get into the plants. So to keep everything easy in the house, I don't keep many plants. A few in terrariums, I keep them. But some of the books that I like to read through the winter, and maybe you will too, is one that really fascinates me, Johnny Appleseed, The Man, The Myth, and The American Story. I have a recent copy of New Information. This was printed, I think, 2011, somewhere around there. Guy that did a lot of research on Johnny Appleseed and digs in deeper into what kind of man he was. So that was Johnny Appleseed. And I have an older one that was printed about 100 years ago. And this is...
Say, that looks like an old, I could tell, that hardcover book and the
the
aged pages on there.
Yep. This is an old one. So I really wanted to get into Johnny Appleseed, so you have to get a book, an old book, an antique book, and see what they thought about him back then. And I like old books because they're closer to the time period when things really happen. So I got a lot of neat information out of that book too. So you'll have to really look hard for that in antique stores and so on.
What's the name of this one?
Johnny Appleseed. That's it.
That's it. Who's the author?
Eleanor Akinson. Eleanor Akinson. Am I pronouncing that right?
Atkinson.
Atkinson.
Yeah. Eleanor Atkinson, I would pronounce that. I want to open this up and see.
Sure. Yeah, go right ahead.
I want to see what...
I like to collect antique garden books. I have several.
Yeah.
All my books, I have well over 200 books.
1915, this says.
1915? Yeah. Okay.
So it is an antique. It's over 100 years old.
It's 100 years old.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And I'm always on the lookout for another Johnny Appleseed book because he is interesting. And the apple was so doggone important to us. At one time in America, in order for you to claim a piece of property, the government insisted that you plant an apple orchard because the government knew that it would take many years for that apple orchard to grow and start producing apples. Apples were extremely important to American people. And so they knew that you would stay on that piece of land because at first, when we first settled this land, we would come in, we would garden or farm in an area, and then when that became weak, not producing well, we'd move on. We just kept moving on. The government wanted us to stay and build towns and cities, so they made that rule of you had to plant an apple orchard in order to claim that piece of property.
Oh, wow.
And make you stay. And another interesting thing about the apple is all cultures on Earth had a way of producing a drink that was good for you, you know, whether it be beer or wine or anything like that. The Americans had to be different. We chose the apple to make cider. So that's how the apple became an American fruit, even though it's not from America. There were wild crab apples here, but there was never an apple tree that was brought over by the Europeans. Its its original place they've discovered is in Kazakhstan, where it still grows there today. And some of those apple trees are 300, 400, 500 years old.
Wow.
And
neat.
The apple there is so diverse because it is on the Silk Road that you can get an apple that may taste like a banana. You might get an apple that tastes like a plum, any flavor, any size, color that you can imagine.
Wow. That's weird. It's an apple that tastes like a banana.
Yeah. Yep.
I've never heard of such a thing.
And there's big neat. Research projects up in the northern part up by the Great Lakes in New York that grows a lot of these odd apples, antique apples that you'll never see anywhere else. And you can go visit that place with an appointment because it is a government-run project. Another good one I always like to just look through, and I know you probably can't see these here, Peterson's Guide to Trees. It's a nice, interesting book. So you can learn more about the trees so that when you are out driving around or walking through the woods or a trail anywhere, you can see what kind of trees are growing there. So that's a real good one. I always have one of them with me.
What is it? Peterson First Guide?
Yeah, Peterson First Guides.
Trees.
Yeah. Okay. He makes a lot of them, you know, with wildflowers and shrubs and all kinds of plants. They're a good handy book to, if they all fit in your pocket to take out when you're walking around. You know, you really want to get some information on what kind of plant is that.
That's author George A. Petrides. George Petrides. There you go.
Okay. That's a good one, though.
Yeah.
One of my favorite is written by David Attenborough. I think everybody knows David Attenborough. And this is about the private life of plants.
That's another old-looking book. That's a hardcover.
Hardcover. It's not real old, though, I think.
Yeah, I bet you it's the 60s or something.
It's more like 19. Well, let me look real quick.
The pages
here.
Are white.
Yeah.
So not yellow. So I always see, whenever I see a hardcover book without a sleeve, you know, I always say, oh, it's got to be really old. 95.
Was first printed in 95.
Old enough.
Yeah. real interesting book about how a plant lives and survives and why it grows where it grows and how they've moved throughout the earth. A lot of real interesting stories in there. Another one of my favorites. Geez, they're all my favorites, you know.
Yeah.
The Forest Unseen. And this author, David George Haskell, decided that he wanted to go out in the forest and pick just one small spot, one square yard of forest. That's all. A 3x3 spot. And he watched it all the way through the 12 months of a year. And discovered a lot of interesting things, what happens in one square yard of a forest. That was a real interesting book. And
Unseen.
Yeah, The Forest Unseen. Mm-hmm. Just picking one square yard of forest and watching it for a whole year. Another book given to me by a friend. This is the Ghost of Evolution. And I talked about the Dawn Redwood and the thorns on the locust tree. And this whole book talks about all of those things of some of the trees that have existed since the time of the dinosaurs and around that time, and why they still exist today, and possibly what their future is. So that's a neat one, The Ghost of Evolution. One of the books I use a lot, and it's a Brief History of Gardening. This one does talk about right from the very beginning that we know of gardening right up to now, and how gardening has changed, and sometimes how it's not changed, and why we do garden. So that's a great book to read through the winter.
And the author was what?
Oh, the author is Neil Fairbrin.
Okay.
Do I pronounce that right? Or you try.
Who knows?
Yeah.
Fairbairn. Neil Fairbairn, A Brief History of Gardening.
Yeah, it's a good read for the winter or any time, really. And I did talk a little bit about the oak. This book here that I really fell in love with, it's Oak, The Frame of Civilization. And in this book, it tells how important the oak has become to all of us. and always has been. According to this guy here, William Bryant Logan, was a scientist, and he was doing a study on population, civilizations throughout the whole world, where they began. And through his research, he had a graduate student. He asked the graduate student to give me a world map of where all the big populations started. And the grad mistaken him for where did all the oaks begin. And so the grad pulled up a map of that and showed it to him. And they laid it down to a map beside where all the civilizations, the great civilizations of the world started too. And they noticed they were exactly the same.
Oh, neat.
And so he had to dig deeper into that to find out why the oak and man grew up together, evolved together. And they came up with a lot of great information on that. And it proves that how important the oak was to civilization. As a matter of fact, out in California, you can still find acorn stashes that the North American natives had used thousands of years ago and for some reason abandoned. And they did find out that, and still some of them still practice this, that they collect the acorns in the fall, bury them in a creek where fresh water is flowing through them. That takes all the tannins out of them. Then they can dig them up in the spring and then use all those acorns to produce a flour that's extremely nutritious so that they could survive for long periods of time, even if the weather didn't permit other crops to grow. They can survive on just the acorns. And we found that all throughout the world. As a matter of fact, there are some places in Asia that still practice that. So that the oak, the frame of civilization. Another interesting book here is 100 Flowers and How They Got Their Names. That's a pretty neat book, you know, and you, sometimes you may wonder, you know, why do we call a petunia a petunia?
That's because Larry Petunia discovered it. It's easy.
No.
Oh, not. No.
And the petunia grows in South America on hilltops there. It grows wild. And it was brought into civilization, or civilization, I guess. It was brought into all the rest of the world as a great flower. At one time, even, I heard a story, and that's not in this book, and I heard this through the Grahams, that there was a fella, an American, that took a plane ride down to South America collecting plants, because that was a big thing in the 1800s and early 1900s, to collect plants from all over the world and become a millionaire by selling this new plant. But this fella flew down to America, or South America, to try and find out where plants come from. And he discovered a hillside full of petunias, and the farmer owned this hillside. And so he asked the farmer, can I collect some of these petunias? And so the farmer and him made a deal that you can collect as many as you want if you give me a gift. Well, the gift ended up to be his airplane.
Oh.
So he collected all these petunia seeds, and petunia seeds are very, very small. So you can get a million petunia seeds in a pound. So he collected a lot of seed and brought them back to America. And, of course, the rest of the story is it's one of the most popular annuals that we've ever known.
You got to wonder if that's a good gift or a bad gift. It sounds like a fantastic gift, an airplane. But then you got to figure out how to
get them back.
How to fly.
Oh, yeah.
First of all.
Yeah.
Hey, here's an airplane. Thanks, but I'm not a pilot. it's a couple thousand pound paperweight, but thanks.
Yeah.
I'm not trying that. Well, we're going to take a short break.
Okay.
By the way, I wanted to mention the author of this one. It was Diana Wells, 100 Flowers and How They Got Their Name. By Diana Wells. All right. So we'll take a short break. We'll be back and we'll give you some more suggestions for winter reading material. It's The Gardening Show right here on B107.5 FM.
If you need it for fall, you'll find it at Worth W. Smith Company Hardware. For fall cleanup, they have a big supply of trash cans and trash bags, including large leaf bags. It's time to stock up on your heating supplies like pellets, propane, and hard-to-find coal. They have it all at Worth Smith. With winter just around the corner, don't forget your rock salt, plus pet-safe ice melter. And they still have all sizes of canning jars and canning supplies. Remember, if you need it, you'll find it at Worth W. Smith Company Hardware in Bradford.
And welcome back to The Gardening Show. It's B107.5, and our phone lines are open, by the way, just because we're talking about reading material, and we could still take your questions at 814-368-9372. And we have some emails. I don't know if we've gotten to these before, but they were from a couple of weeks ago, it looks like. Or actually, this one was just from a few days ago. You want to take an email here?
Anne
Campagnani says, good morning. My husband wants to save his geraniums for next year. Some still with blossoms. How far should and when should he trim them down and shorten them?
Okay, you got to bring them indoors, for one thing. And you can trim off about half of it, half the plant, trim it down, if you like. And pot it up in nice, fresh potting soil. And keep it in a well-lit spot. And it becomes a great house plant. And if you're using a good potting soil, remember that most of them have fertilizer in them already, so you're not going to have to fertilize for the first month. And then after that, you're going to have to start fertilizing from time to time. Now, it may look pretty ugly at first, but believe me, it will save. You can save geraniums for years and years this way by bringing them indoors, potting them up, and treating them just like a houseplant. If you don't have a nice sunny window, a nice LED fluorescent light over the top of it for 12 hours a day will be sufficient. And that's not going to cost you much in electricity, that LED, just for a few pennies. So it's a fun thing to do, and it can be very rewarding because every year that geranium is going to get bigger and bigger, and they are easy to save. They can make nice houseplants. Another way is to dig them up and just shake off some of the old soil there and store them in a cold, dark place, not freezing for the winter. And you can come spring, early spring, you can pot them up and start watering and fertilizing, and they should come back to growth that way. But I highly recommend just potting them up, treating them like a house plant. And in that way, you're sure that you'll keep them going, and they'll be much bigger and more blossoms that coming spring. Fun thing to do, saving geraniums.
Okay. So about half the plant, you said.
And
the when part?
You should have dug them up by now. Mm-hmm. If you haven't, you know, you still time to dig it up. A geranium's pretty hardy. You can take that first couple frost. So if you haven't dug them up by now, do it right now and pot them up in some nice new potting soil. Try to shake off some of the old potting, some of the old soil, garden soil or potting soil that it was in, mm-hmm. and all fresh new potting soil and into a nice light. Now, they don't have to be in a warm spot. Geraniums survive very well right on down to temperature of 34 and continue to grow. Below 34, then they start to show the effects of the cold and start to fail then. So get them into the warmth, and you'll be successful with that.
All right.
Make sure you clean off the dead leaves from time to time because they will get moldy, and then they can cause some disease in a geranium.
We had another email that we actually answered, but then we had a reply. So we have from Kim Brown about the pumpkins. She said, my pumpkin plants were flowering a lot, but did not produce any pumpkins. Any ideas on why? Lots of pretty flowers, though. And I remember you said it was probably
pollination.
Pollination. Yeah. They didn't get pollinated.
Now, first, all squash will, the first several blossoms that come out will all be male. They got to produce the fruit on the female blossom. They have two different blossoms on squash, male and a female. Once they are producing both female and male, and a bee or a fly or somebody comes by and collects the nectar the pollen mm-hmm. from the male blossom and delivers it to the female blossom, then it'll be pollinated. Now, if you don't have any bees, you won't get any pollination, so you won't get any fruit. So it's always a good idea to plant a few flowering plants that will really attract those pollinators to your garden. Plant a few of those flowering plants, like the petunia, in your vegetable garden. Mm-hmm. They don't have to be in the ground. You can put them in pots. Just set them real close to that squash plant or your cucumber plant or a lot of your plants that need pollination, and then you'll be successful.
Now, she continues with a follow-up email. She says, I did try to pollinate them with a tiny paintbrush, like you even suggested earlier in the season.
Yeah.
You said that that's a thing, but she says, I guess I didn't do it right. Oh, well, I'll try again next year. And she enjoys the show, and thank you.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry you weren't successful, but with gardening, you know, a lot of times we have failures. A lot of times we have successes. That's just part of gardening. You know, don't quit.
Don't get discouraged.
Yeah. And sometimes it's just environmental sometimes. Mm-hmm. Sometimes Mother Nature just throws those perfect situation out to where a plant is happy and just grows, doesn't want to produce the next generation. And so we just have to be patient. It's always next year is going to be a better year. So
there you go.
Don't get discouraged by your pumpkin plant didn't produce this year. Next year it probably will.
Couple minutes left in the show. We have our phone lines open, 814-368-9372. Our email is garden@wesb.com, and we're on Facebook Live as well, so you could comment on our Facebook page and ask your question that way. In the meantime, you still have some more books.
I'll just go through them real quick. Quickly. This is a great one for any gardener, The Botany for Gardeners by Brian Capon, C-A-P-O-N.
Capon.
Capon, okay.
I don't know.
That's a great one for any gardener. It really gives you a good scientific explanation about how and why plants work the way they do, but in a gardener's vernacular, not a college student's vernacular. In this at same way, this is How Plants Work, by Linda Chockler Scott. Mm-hmm.
Just like plain English books, and have to be a professor to understand what they're talking about.
Yeah, this is a great book. There's a lot of great hints. And, you know, if you're not quick enough to write all this down.
No, it's going to be on demand on our website, too. That's what I figured.
So don't worry about that. That's why I'm mm-hmm. going through it quickly.
Yeah.
The Founding Gardeners. Real interesting history book on who was our founding gardeners. And I'll give you a little hint, you know, George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, and John Adams were our founding gardeners. They did a lot of work in gardening, and a lot of that information we still use today. They were real important men for gardening in America.
And may I suggest their servants and slaves probably were.
We're very good gardeners.
We're
too.
Very good and integral in that part. Yeah.
Some of them extremely important.
And this is by, I want to give the authors out too. So, Founding Gardeners by Andrea Wolf.
Yeah.
W-U-L-F.
Great book. Seeds. And this really goes into the importance of seeds and why plants produce seeds and how they produce them and make sure that they don't all go to food, but are left to reproduce. A real good book, and that's by Richard Horan, H-O-R-A-N. That's a pretty interesting book. A real good one, Chicken Soup for Gardeners. This tells the story of plants and how a lot of the people that planted them and the reason they planted them. Maybe some people have heard of the largest rose in the world out in Arizona. I got to visit it. It's just too big to even describe. You could probably fit probably 100 people underneath this rose that's growing in Tucson, Arizona. Tombstone, Arizona. Tombstone, Arizona.
Tombstone, Arizona.
Tombstone, Arizona.
Wow. So does it support its own weight?
No, it's on a trellis, a huge trellis.
Wow.
Grown up into like a tree form. And there's just thousands and thousands of blossoms on it when it is blooming. And it's very well protected in behind a bunch of buildings in a courtyard type of situation. And it's just amazing to see this plant.
How long have they been growing this thing?
Since the 1800s.
Woo!
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep. The farmer really came over here from the old world, and his wife was real homesick. And he was able to purchase a rose from the old world and plant it for his wife so she can remember her old world. And so it's a really neat story, and it's just an amazing thing to see.
Chicken soup for the gardener's soul.
Yes.
All right.
Yep. 101 stories.
Nice.
And
then our last two real quick. We are all out of time.
Another one on seeds. Tells you all the importance of seeds and how they've traveled throughout the world.
And
By Thor Hansen.
Okay.
By Thor Hansen.
Seeds.
Seeds,
it's
yep.
It's called Seeds?
Yep, just Seeds.
The Triumph of Seeds.
Yep.
Thor Hansen. And our last one today.
The Lives of Trees by Dana Wells.
Diana.
And it's an uncommon history of the lives of trees. It's
Diana Wells.
Yep.
Lives of the trees.
So that's some interesting reading that gardeners can do through the winter. Of course, I get a lot of magazines and catalogs too. They're all very interesting, and they keep our interest going and our knowledge increasing, so that we can become better gardeners.
Thank you, Bob. We'll be back again next week. Our last episode of the season, correct?
I thought this one was the last one.
No, the 22nd. Next one's the 29th.
Okay. Yeah, you're right. You're right. I'm sorry.
We got one more, so.
Okay.
If that's all right with you.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, good. We'll be back next week then, one last time with Master Gardener Bob Harris. Have a fantastic weekend. It's B107.5.